Welcome to the Football Shirt Pod. We're back again after a 12-month hiatus. The last time we recorded a podcast was just before Euro 2020. That was actually in 2021, of course, to mark the 25th anniversary of Euro 96. We're now actually here live, not technically live, but actually here in person, as opposed to talking over a kind of Zoom call. So that's really good. So, we're here to talk about the Premier League, actually, and obviously it's the 30th anniversary of the kickoff of the Premier League in August 1992. Now, we should preface this by saying we understand that the Premier League football existed before the birth of the Premier League. Absolutely agree with that. However, I think it would be slightly churlish of us not to mark this anniversary 30 years on. So we're going to do that by looking at the best football kits, the football shirts rather, that redefined, or have defined so far anyway, the Premier League era. And to do so, I'm joined by the old gang. So we've got Lewis, good friend of Cult Kits, and from the campaign against Living Miserably, aka Calm. David Jones from Cult Kits, back again in a Swindon Town shirt. Pretty niche, but very nice. And Merce, another very good friend of Cult Kits. And we're in Merce's pub at the moment, and it's pretty sticky and quite warm, and these shirts are probably not helping us avoid sweating. But
the home of football.
It's now been branded as the home of football. Let's get straight into it, I think. So Lewis, let's kick off with you. I asked you all to pick three shirts that you think really kind of define the Premier League era. What is your first choice?
Yeah, well, luckily my choice was complemented by the fact that Cult Kits have.
Yeah, well, luckily my choice.
They've got lots of awesome shirts, by the way.
Yeah, complemented. Yeah, right.
Cult Kits. Find them at click below.
Put a message over there.
Yeah, there's no. Yeah. Find them at click below or above. Link it here. Yeah. But yeah, so 1992. I think it was centenary shirt. It was a year before this, and this was 93, 94. Yeah, and it's just, yeah, first time I'm sort of becoming a Liverpool fan. I was actually, grew up in Portugal, came along, cousin told me to be a Liverpool fan, and this was the very first hand-me-down I had, so yeah. Big shout out to Jay. But always remember it because, just dead striking. It had the away kit was the same, wasn't it? It was in the old Adidas EQT colours, wasn't it? And that coming up was, number one, and also a Liverpool shirt, because the other two, I've got in mind a sort of rival shirt, which is quite nice as well. But
we should say, obviously, for anybody listening to this and not viewing it, this is the how do you describe that shirt to someone who can't actually see it?
Well, it's that early, so the early Premier League Liverpool shirt. So it's the, if you think about those three Adidas stripes coming up from your hips towards your heart, if you like, is how we'll go for
it.
Standard
on the shorts.
But that was it, and I think we've spoken about this before briefly, but you can no longer have it anymore. So they're releasing a lot of the kits. So you look at the bruised banana of Arsenal, and a lot of those kits are sort of being remade, modern era. But there's something along there's FIFA rulings where you could no longer have those three stripes. I think it might be to do with sort of like almost too much advertising and whatnot. Yeah. So it sort of stays in that era. Yeah. It stays in the 90s and it stays in the early days. And I think at the time, I think there was no doubt in Liverpool fans and Liverpool players' minds that the success was going to continue. It didn't. It's sort of a little bit of its back now, but that sense of, I don't know, there was an awe around the players, and I think at the time John Barnes was on the biggest salary when the Prem first started. You know, we were in that first Charity Shield, which I know that some links down to Canton we're going to talk about at some point. But
big club legends there as well that was just starting to break through as well.
McManaman in the shirt, exactly. Exactly. You can see them all in it. So that's definitely my first selection.
Is that the first time they used that badge? Because the badge changed around this time, didn't it? I can't remember if this was the first kit that they had that very elaborate badge with the Shankly gates.
They did have it on season four.
Okay.
Yeah. 92 marks 100 years as well. So that's centenary of Liverpool.
Yeah.
So I know there was a few changes around the badge for then. But you're right, the Shankly gates and then the Eternal Flame.
I always think those kits. I was watching the other day, Sky replayed the first ever Super Sunday game, which was Forest Liverpool at City Ground. Forest won, ended up finishing bottom of the league. Liverpool,
they've got that great kit in that game, haven't they? The red pin,
beautiful
white pinstripe
on the red. Beautiful kit. And Liverpool had the green, it's really shiny. you know, it was a really odd shirt. But they, those shirts and this one as well, they're kind of quite a step away from what sort of came before that in terms of football shirts. They look so different, don't they? Even the necks, the collars is completely different.
Just details, I think. I think there's that shift of, I don't know whether they knew it at the time, and obviously even the stages of building the Premier League, I don't think it was signed off until May of 92, never mind playing it. So the breakaway, I think there's old stories of them even trying to use headed paper. So like the Big Five, the chief execs were top businessmen or whatever, but it was all a bit rushed, and it was all a bit, we've got to get this thing over the line. And I think that really quickly after that, the kits changed with like that mood. I think Sky obviously got kick on with it, and you know, from a few things obviously didn't get right, you know, cheerleaders and whatever. So, you know, that it was the American, like, sort the of model, wasn't it? Yeah, I think even things like Mercy, you talk about squad numbers, and there's an Americanization of the franchise. It was a big deal, and I think the shirts, you know, you no longer have one sponsor had come in. Well, for a few years, but the details on shirts all of a sudden meant you could, well, they're annually now, but you could bring a few more out. But like,
well, that template is the World Cup 94 template as well, isn't it?
Right,
so that, like, another link to Americanization. But with the squad numbers and stuff, I went to this really random charity event that was an audience with David Dean, and
it's quite niche.
I feel like this is going to go somewhere.
It was very niche.
I was not expecting.
Yeah, me and David Dean, four bells in the morning, out and about on the tap. Weird story about that. Was actually a guy there who was just there to heckle him, and he's obviously quite a niche David Dean heckler, because David Dean knew him as soon as he seen him. He's like, for fuck's sake. But he was talking about one of the big things that they tried to do when they went to the Football League about reform and so on, was present to the chairmen of all 92 clubs and say, listen, we see great value in monetizing our merchandise and so on. So we've seen it in the NFL where they have names, designated squad number, name on the back, done. And then you buy that shirt for that player. Flying off the shelves, you go to these grounds, they've got rails and rails and rails, just individual players and people snap them up.
Yeah.
I think it was the Oldham chairman was like, you bloody expect me to buy 10 shirts per season per player? Absolutely not. Absolute disgrace. And loads of the other teams in the foot. Sorry about anyone from Oldham listening to that. Any Oldham Athletic needs that. You've had a real tough time enough as it is.
Yeah.
You've got these Football League chairmen stopping the progression of clubs wanting to progress their future and so on. Which is obviously quite relevant in the last few years as well with the developments of the Super League and so on. But yeah, for them, and as you said, the first season doesn't have.
No names and squad numbers. So, but it goes again. That's what I was saying about whether it's rushed. The embryonic stage of the Premiership, Carling Premiership, as it was known then, might have been rushed. People can catch on quick onto the things that are going to make a difference, and exactly that, with details of a collar, because I suppose they just started thinking, we want to start releasing more shirts more regularly.
Yeah, I think certainly from the start of the Premier League with Sky, even as a young kid obsessed with football, you had this massive awareness of the greater sense of marketing that was going into every single game. Pre that, it was like you go to the game, you get used to what was on the advertising board. Actually, like watching live games or getting the opportunity to watch them, obviously not live, but you know, or some of them. But it just seemed like there was much more money behind it instantly.
Yeah.
It just seemed totally different. Anywhere that they could put anything behind it, it was there. And obviously, at that age, you're all there for it. Now,
I think you're right, but I would say go back and watch that game. Honestly, watch the Sky coverage. It's so unbelievably understated compared to what you have now.
Okay.
You know, it was really quite low key, actually. And obviously, it was still, you know, not. Comparatively, but if you look at it now, you think, Jesus, really? This is the first ever live televised Premier League game. And what I'd also say about watching that game is Roy Keane makes two horrendous tackles.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
And awful. Andy Gray, question marks over him, but he's just like, no. Possibly yellow for the first one, but no, let's just move on. And it's so interesting watching that kind of, you know, 30 years ago, obviously a long time ago, but the game has changed so much. So. Great. Well, it's a fantastic choice.
Thank you for letting me see it.
Very, 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 very.
No, but it was a memory this morning until David brought it in.
So that's a great show. David, let's go to you next. What's your choice? What's your first choice?
Well, look, I'm going to start with the fact that I am not hugely knowledgeable about Swindon Town, but.
What?
Apologies. But the fact that you know, Colchis is, you know, based in Swindon.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you didn't already know that. Mm-hmm. It would be wrong for me to, yeah, Colchis.com.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
If you didn't already know that, it was a question of, you know, well, how do we start it off? And I was told by some guys back at Colchis that I could not start the pod without wearing this shirt.
Right.
And it was only worn once in their only season in the Premier League.
Okay.
And from what I can remember about Swindon is that they conceded a lot of goals, and apparently it's the record amount of goals conceded by any team in the Premier League, which is 100.
Yeah.
And it was only, yeah, only won once.
Yes.
All publicity is good publicity, though. What a record to have.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. 100 goals.
Third shirt, it's incredibly rare.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about that logo,
amazing.
The club?
Yeah, the club badge.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, pays homage to the, you know, the railways.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah. I might be wrong.
Yeah.
I have to come back in, re-edit this, reshoot it again.
Yeah. Mick Lynch, yeah. I know you're a big fan of the podcast.
Yeah.
Please don't
yeah.
If we've got it wrong.
Yeah. But I mean, you would never have this, you know, this stacked amount of type going on underneath it. Being a designer, I can't not mention it. But
yeah.
I mean, that's from a. It's not fitting for any form of online purposes now. That's for sure.
So just before we carry on, so anyone listening to this, what? So this is 93-94. Swindon third shirt, white with red pinstripes.
That's right, yeah. Players have worn it, I'm trying to think.
Fjortoft.
Yeah, Fjortoft.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
straight away.
Yeah.
When they said, it was only worn once during the season.
Yeah. It's a very good condition.
I didn't know they had a third shirt,
yeah.
If I'm honest,
no.
Which I know, apologies to Swindon Town fans, but yeah, didn't
know
it.
No, absolutely.
But yeah, it's a beautiful shirt and one that... Rob, the founder of Colchis, has kindly lent me.
Yeah.
It's in mint condition. I mean,
that's a great sponsor, by the way.
Yeah, but it is. The details on stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Davey.
Thanks.
Fine choice.
Thanks.
Merce, what are you going with?
So, my first choice, I'm going to go with the West Ham 99-01 home kit. Feeler, hadn't really been on the scene before in terms of footy, come out with an absolute banger. Doesn't have a sponsor for the first year.
Is that right?
Yeah, which is bizarre. And then, all of a sudden, Doc Martens are on the front of the kit. Fucking hell. That
it's
is
a wet dream.
It's unbelievable. It's got everything. It's East London, Doc Martens, great Burgundy. Who doesn't like that?
Yeah.
But it's something that I can really remember standing out as a... And this is the beauty of the Prem, I think, compared to other leagues, in a sense of not many clubs have won the Premier League, in a sense of, in like obviously a lot of teams have won it numerous times. You've got Leicester, which is the biggest shock ever. You'd look back at it if you didn't know about footy and think, oh, Blackburn won the Prem. They spent millions on like assembling that squad. So they're gonna be up there at the time. But you've got a club there, West Ham, who obviously have the pony kits. In the early days,
which is a genuine brand,
not
just
Cockney
rhyming slang.
And then all of a sudden move over to this like incredible brand that have never really done kits before.
Fiorentina aside.
I think the only other English club I can really think of them doing was Luton.
Really?
So,
I didn't know that. At one point.
Yeah.
So real mismatch there. And obviously Russian and Diamonds, but I don't know, they didn't have that.
Did they have Feeler? They had Doc Martens.
But if you look at that period of time, and this is, again, the beauty of the Prem, it says that they assembled a squad and a team that everyone would look at it and go, oh, yeah, that is good.
Yeah.
Like, nostalgic, you'd look at it.
Yeah.
Shaka Hislop in net and Craig Forrest. You've got Stuart and Ian Pearce, Neil Ruddock, Ian Wright,
Neil Ruddock was still playing.
Right. Well, do you remember Vieira spits in his face?
Yeah, he does.
In the roundabout. And he like he sort of pulls back from him. Ian Wright's there for a bit before he goes on loan up to Celtic. You've got Paolo Wanchope, Mark Vivian Foe, and Frederick Canute, who obviously then goes and rips it up like in his later career.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of that, you've got Rio Ferdinand, Frank Lampard, Michael Carrick, and a young Joe Cole.
Yeah.
All in that
mix
of you've got these real old school early Premier League players that you would really associate with, Ian Wright, Razor Ruddock, Stuart Pearce, who you'd even go further back than that. And then you've got these international foreign imports who've come in at the time and then go on to much bigger things. But then you've got the pretty much future generation of English football in your Ferdinands, your Carricks, Cole, Lampard, who then go on and do unbelievable things. And if you think of some of the moments that happened in that shirt that you think back of, obviously the Di Canio goal is one that everyone looks at. You've got that mad 5-4 versus Bradford, where Di Canio just laying on the floor.
And he tries to walk off at one point, because the ref won't give him penalties.
So you've got a team there that you look back at nostalgic and go, oh yeah, that is good.
Was that the kit that Di Canio scored at Old Trafford?
Was that the season away, after? He's in the away kit of that. He's in like a blue kit, which is really navy, which is well nice. Similar sort of template, but there's these big moments that happen in it, and they win the most niche trophy ever in that period of time, the Intertoto Cup. Who doesn't want that in the trophy cabinet? I think it's presented like in a plaque. It's a bizarre thing, but for me, everything about that is just like, if you look at some of those players that are wearing it, it's unbelievable.
Is it the last great sponsor? Because I have this thing, in a sense, like even internationally. Well, I wonder, but only in a sense, like, because I was thinking about like Peugeots, JVCs. But what I suppose not great, but what I mean is that turn of the century comes with a few things. Well, it is. But I think that turn of the century comes with quite a big shift in owners and sponsors. So, I don't know, Sharp to Vodafone, still big corporates. But like, it's still, obviously, it's before cryptocurrency. And obviously, it's slightly before gambling to a point. But like, that it's quite an attractive sort of sponsor that what's stake.com, forgive me unless you'd like to sponsor the next podcast, but in those senses of like what are they, to link an era, you know, and obviously as easy as maybe for alcohol brands or whatever, obviously Newcastle, Newcastle Brown Ale and whatnot, Strongboat Leeds, I think Colt Kitt's brilliant, done something on food as well. I think you've covered boxes, was it Domino's at Fulham? Pizza, that was it. But anyway, not too many brands. But that sense of, it really changes after that. And I think that, and I don't know whether it's also, is there something about a team that doesn't do very well that makes them sometimes a bit more attractive? Exactly. Maybe as a United fan, other than the goal you just described, Josh, was like, West Ham aren't a threat. So you can like Di Canio and you can like West Ham's shirt and like Doc Martens, because like, there's almost like an underdog thing at the time. But like, it just felt like a good link.
I think you're right as well, because I was, we talked to Brian Dean recently, a scorer of the first ever Premier League goal, and it was about a story about sort of nostalgia for shirts and other sporting memorabilia. And I said to him, I'm an Ipswich fan. And straight away we went, Fysons. He just said Fysons to me. And I was like, oh, okay. And Fysons is, I don't know if it's still going actually, but it's like weird, like, I can't even think what it is. It's like a, farming chemicals or something like that. It's completely insane. And basically the office, the Fysons office is about 10 metres away from Portman Road. So it was like this really quite innocent thing around very local firms sponsoring the team. And Ipswich from the Premier League, obviously, at this point. That would never happen now. We'd be betting, NFT, crypto, whatever. You know, I think you're right. It was almost like an indication of the way the Premier League was changing from a sort of the old Division One almost to this global sort of business.
Yeah, and well, that's it. But that's amazing to think. Well, Tractor Boys as well, isn't it? That's a glorious thing. But then for Brian Dean, again, Benfica legends as well. That's another time. But to remember that is that association is, and I know that. So even like looking at this sort of stuff and talking about the Premier League, and it might already feels quite 90s focused, but it also sort of should be. That's sort of how nostalgia works. But those connections
and
of things.
The best bit.
Well, it is, isn't it? But it's it's not even SD. It's faded in your mind perfectly.
I've
like
just
it should
scraped
be.
Him with 01 on that.
True.
Let's not
try. It does make that difference. But I think a little bit what you said about football not starting in 92. I mean, there's quite a lot about speaking up to date modern football that does really start then. So like I think this started as the Carling Premiership, didn't it? But like whatever has evolved to the Premier League, and these days I think they intentionally don't have a sponsor because they clearly don't need it and whatnot. But I think 92, it's not too much of a political podcast, but you know, the war in Bosnia leads to Yugoslavia not playing in the Euros. So like Denmark, you know, take that on, and that's, you know, they hadn't qualified that year for the Euros, and they go on to win it, you know, at the expense of the Dutch. But me and Dave were talking about, if you ever watched that final, the back pass rule was horrendous. But actually, 1992 is when the back pass rule stops. So you've got the Premiership now, you've got the back pass rule changing, and also I think the Champions League becomes the Champions League after the European Cup, so more teams are playing there. Yeah. So you're absolutely right, and you have to caveat every conversation with football didn't start in 92. Yeah. But actually, yeah, but, like, a lot of football really did start. No, but
what,
like,
you,
yeah,
what you view now.
Definitely, is, the things you understand. Like, imagine, like, even, I must have lived it, I mean, born in 86, but like, I really don't properly remember anyone passing the ball back to a goalkeeper. Like, everyone doesn't know Mercy plays, who's been top keeper in his whole life, still plays a bit for the team he started and whatnot. But like that sense of, hang on, we're going to wind down the clock or whatever else. You know, those things have to change. Offside is a bit of a difference at the time, but the things we know now, these big things, the Champions League, the Premier League, and those rules are. It was a really, really important time.
Yeah. I can remember that being such a drastic change because I was a goalkeeper as a kid. I can remember my dad just shouting like hysterically, "Don't pick it up! Don't pick it up!" As if like, now that would be madness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's such a point.
Kill the generation of keepers, like for example Peter Shilton, right?
Yeah.
He says the downside, like when he knew, he obviously played on for loads longer, but he couldn't kick the ball.
Right.
Like he was crap.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Like so that really, really killed him off. And I can remember being that another real change a couple of years later. I want to say I would have been 11, 12. So like 97, 98, where you could still throw it back to the goalie and they could pick it up.
Right. From a throw-in.
And they could pick it up. And I can remember that changing and like the first training session of the pre-season being like, where is that at the time? But it was like, don't pick it up.
But those, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, when you talk about football shirts, it is always, there's an amount of merchandise and commerce and whatnot, but just those big changes. Yeah. And
have
what
you seen that
next?
Clip? There's a really funny clip on YouTube. There's a guy that's hired just to go around outside Old Trafford and shut down all the rogue market stalls and staffs and stuff because they're so heavily franchised at the time. It's like 93, 94. Yeah. I mean, it's there and thereabouts. This guy, you can tell he's employed locally, probably been a fan all his life, and he's having to go around and shut down the stalls of people that he probably knows and stop it that they can't sell scarves.
Doing it for years.
They don't have the right license to be near the stadium, this, that, and the other. And it's just like, you know, and then the guys that are there and have gone through, like, I guess what they'll be perceived as like the proper channels. Yeah. Showing him their pass. And then he's like, you can stay here type thing because it's like official franchise stuff. Pre the contract store going out.
Well, I can remember going to like a day to go to Old Trafford for us was like the best day ever.
Yeah.
And the store they had was just like a ramshackle shop. And I can remember going in and like absolutely loving it. And then a year or so later going back, and that's when they opened the first ever mega store.
Yeah.
And it was huge. And United at the time, like under Martin Edwards, were just the king of commerciality and just absolutely smashed it. And then that period of time going from an old, I think it's, is it still there, the old one? It might be something else, but it was, as you'd go into any club that you'd expect that a shop to be, but the mega store was like, everything is branded.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
And they thought
it's
of everything.
Wild.
Well.
Yeah.
So anything. I remember going there. Yeah. It was everything was thought of.
Yeah.
From key rings to
Fred the Red's on anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But 92, or even so, I know we've chatted about 96, or maybe a bit longer, you're also still at a time where you can't just order it online, so you have got to go.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you have
yeah,
to have a mega store.
Yeah,
you have to have a mega store.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember being at school, and I mean, Mercer's spoken about it before. So recently bought a pair of trainers I'll never wear, but I couldn't have them as a kid. Basically, I won't mention names, but the point being, this kid had to have, but this lad, this
go
lad,
on,
but it was.
Can't
no,
say
I can't.
It.
I can't.
Go on,
no, I can't. No. This is a very, very popular podcast. This is that. But the point was, when he came back, this lad, he had to have gotten from America. And like, and we were sound. I'm not in no way saying, you know, very lucky childhood and whatnot. But he had to. I'd never been to America, so he had to have gotten from there. And obviously now, you know, you obviously order them. But going, but with on that point was, you know, to have a shirt. Never mind. I think when I remember Lillywhites, what's that, Piccadilly Circus and whatnot. That's the first lot that sort of doing trackies. So you know, whether you could get up to Anfield or wherever else, like they just had these. And obviously now it's a. Insert Mike Ashley business and whatnot, but a megastore to go first is where you go and get your bits. And like you said about squad numbers, and that's that rail of, you know, no longer so number nine. Let's say at Liverpool, if Ian Rush has got it, Robbie Fowler's the first 23. I mean, what the fuck was 23 then? But you know, you've got it, Carragher then wore it, you know, and it becomes a thing. But the Megastore, if you get it right first, it's where you'd have to go to get yourself.
And there was an extension of that as well, and that was birthdays.
It's weird.
That. There was more Man United stuff than there was Ipswich.
I'm sure I bought a Man City shirt from Birthdays, the one with the kappa when they got went down to League One.
Yeah,
I feel like I bought it from
the greatest kit never to be in the brand.
A beautiful shirt. I've still got it. Beautiful shirt.
Fowles 23. Do you think he got the Michael Jordan link, or do you think he just Michael Jordan, but again,
Jordan records his best season is 1992. So again, back to sort of those discussions. No, he does. You thought he does. Cause he talks about Kobe Bryant's 03 or whatever. When he talks about like his main seasons, you thought your interests were niche. Thanks for tuning in. But it is a thing. Marcus Trescothick used to wear it for. Oh, doesn't matter. but that sense of having a number, and I don't think it would have clicked at the time. I'm sure, and people still do. What does Zamorano do? I mean, he wasn't waiting for 18. You know, he wanted 9. So I can't imagine Fowler's looked that far ahead. Although his property portfolio would show otherwise, seeing the future. But I think, but then ending up with a number that isn't the thing obviously became a really popular thing.
Yeah. Good. Well, I don't want to talk about Man United anymore because there's been way too much time talking about the commercial success. Yeah. Well done, Martin Edwards. Brilliant. Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, I'll be very quick with my first choice, which was Newcastle. Not the obviously the amazing Grandad collar shirt, although we might come back to that in a minute. Because I mean, that is obviously. Probably is the greatest shirt, let's be honest. But my choice was the 93-95. So Newcastle won in the inaugural Premier League. Ipswich were, by the way. They got promoted in 93. And the first shirt they wore was the Asics shirt. Really like clean, classic design. The one with the star, the Newcastle Brown logo with the silhouette. I mean, it's obviously beautiful.
It's the skyline.
It is. I think it's in my... Design, isn't it? Tybridge. In my opinion, the best... sponsor possibly up for debate, but I think it's certainly one of the best sponsors that we've seen as well. Really, and we were talking about this earlier, that era was lots of bold designs, which is probably why we do love that probably we're going to talk about 90 shirts more than any other. But actually those Asics shirts were very sort of classic, you know, they were quite kind of old school, quite kind of stylish, and
they're
black.
Incredibly hard to get hold of.
So is that a thing? Fresh
Asics
opinion.
Asics Newcastle shirts, I would say we do get them in. But I would say that they're probably one of the first to go as well. Rob,
great
the founder, chance. Big Newcastle fan. They're the ones. I've always questioned how we can let Newcastle shirts go when they come in, because I would struggle. But he always does. But when an Asics shirt's come in, he'll often
great
shirt. Like.
I love
think
the
twice. Yeah, think yeah, twice about yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love the blue away as well.
I was going to say how nice was that blue away?
Really good. Yeah, weird like sort of brush strokes.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, that season just reminds me of Andy Cole, Beardsley.
It was a great team, wasn't it? It was a really exciting team.
They goals between themselves, wasn't it? Obviously before United came in.
Well, it's the 42 game season as well, isn't it? So they just absolutely tear up the pair of them.
The last,
I think it's
20,
the last
22,
one.
22.
Yeah, it's also the bench wear as well. Because this is about shirts, but you know, with all these kits and stuff, like there was particularly in the early 90s. Yeah, I mean, Adidas were kind of the kings of it, really. Mm. Nike hadn't quite come onto the scene yet. Come to that in a later point.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of the bench merchandise that was coming in.
It's
obviously,
nice.
It was then also available for the first time on a commercial level. Had never been before. You get the odd tracksuit that you would probably from Umbro, but that was normally associated with internationals. But if you go back to, I mean, Twitter's rife with it. There's some amazing, people that you can follow on Twitter that are great at posting like the early magazine shots.
And it's the
Spurs tracksuits and things like that.
Yeah.
But they were really hard to get hold of. Really, really hard to get hold of. You get to like the 93-94 era, and that's when I would say Adidas were probably one of the first to really hone in on the fact that people wanted the drill tops. And the full tracksuits, and they did jumpers, they did training shorts, they did everything. Whereas Umbro did do it.
I remember, I'm pretty sure it might have been the 92 FA Cup final. I remember, you know, this is the era where you'd turn the TV on at 12 o'clock and you'd watch all this stuff. Yeah.
How
amazing.
Sad is that?
I know. It's incredible. It's such a wonderful day. I want to be on the coach.
I want to see the aerial shot of the coach.
But I remember they were showing training from the day before, the couple of days before, of Liverpool. It was Liverpool Sunderland. And Liverpool's training was like, one team was wearing the home shirt, the other was wearing like last season's away shirt. Do you know what I mean? So this is like, they're just reusing old stuff they've got. It's not, there's no, I might be misremembering this slightly, so apologies if I am, but I just thought, wow, that's amazing. Now, you'd think they'd have about three different training shirts, wouldn't they? And they'd be all, everything would be an opportunity to sell that shirt.
I was going to say, where'd you put it? Do you put it in a magazine? Obviously, there's social media, whatever, but you find a way. Yeah. But yeah, that's fascinating that, yeah. And of course, that's kind of what I meant about the sort of rushing of, it's such a behemoth now. It's this, genuine sort of monster that you still forget, and the old Durham, it was a very unkind impression. But no, but you've still there now. But you've still got moments where you're going again.
Next one, I'll just do all of the old.
But it was like, but even those connections to like manufacturers, these sort of things do cost, and they're not expendable. And even like the model now of, I'm sure more shirts, it might cost more to have shirts, but as long as more people are wearing, you've seen more photos with I don't know, the Jordan logo or whatever else, or different moments, you forget that they were expensive, and there was no exact science how to sell it.
It's definitely all relative, that's for sure. I mean, people go on now, you can see it on social media, but people will complain about recent releases and how much they cost. I think the difference now is that obviously there are versions of those shirts that are released. So you have your stadium shirt, which is deemed the more affordable, and then you have your player spec shirt.
I find that a bit sad.
Which is a bit, I understand why they do it, but the sad remains is that the player spec shirt is always going to be better. Yeah. So if you're buying
do you think you could pull one of those off?
Sorry?
Do you think you pull the player shirt off?
Well, you're thinking player spec is in like his finger hugging.
Slightly more snuggish.
Like slavery. I think so. It's more a case of it's the quality.
Fucking not true.
It's the quality of the material. All the little touches that until you get up close to it, you don't really recognize. I totally get it why brands do it. Am I all right with it? I'm not so sure.
No, I'm not, personally.
We've got a pal who's a professional troll, I'm describing as.
Professional
troll. Professional troll. Okay. He's a full-time dickhead, I'd describe that. Yeah. We won't mention his name, but as we go on, there will be more stories.
His guest, called eight.
If we got him on, we'd have to.
But it would be with a fake voice and like with a silhouette, wouldn't it?
He's got some female voice.
Because of his old accent.
Being a Man City fan, he is diehard Man City.
Okay.
And worked at the Etihad when they first moved in as a steward, got sacked because he was celebrating with the fans. like really random. So I had a really weird altercation with Michael Johnson once out on the aisle. Really odd. But he gets on Instagram, and basically I point out to him, oh, this is the guy who designs for Puma. So like thinking, he does shows a lot of images, drawing and so forth. Yeah. Cool. Brat. No. We'll have to bleep that out.
David, it was a 39-minute, 25-second recording if we need to.
Messages will be like, what are you doing designing these kits for Man City?
I'm not heard this. The Puma designer. So he's a City fan. He's now.
And he's trolling a Puma. This guy's got like 200 followers. He's got no followers at all. Except that one of our pals has found him. And fair play to this guy. He interacts with him and is like, what do you mean? Like, obviously, football is much different from when you started following it and stuff. And so really starts trolling really starts going for it. But this guy is like, this is nothing to do with Man City. What are you doing? Blah, blah. But they've kept up this relationship now, for 3-4 years. Wow. Where when they released the new home shirt this time around, the guy messaged our pal
before it came out, I was like, you're going to love
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, you're like, you're going to love it because it's what you're talking about and so on and so
forth. Yeah, wow. And like
it's, but it's just that sense of these things are creeping in now to Monday football with your player issues, your stadium issues, and so on and so forth, because it's just a huge market. You've got, if you think of these warm-up kits that clubs go out in now, they retail similar cost to the shirt.
Exactly,
And then you've got an opportunity, so I think it would be the last England shirt I'll buy, but I bought the shirt for the Euros, just gone, the women's shirt. And it was great that they made it in men's sizes, and actually it's quite interesting that I think for a couple of friendlies just before the women's Euros, the men's either friendlies or I can't remember if they're qualifiers or maybe part of the Nations League, they were wearing, so like Spain, Germany, I think another couple of countries, you know, it was to promote, say, you know, our women's side is about to play, you know, let's wear it. And I kind of thought, I wonder if after the success, England would just bring out more versions of it and say, we've just won the Euros, you know, for the Men's World Cup, you know, we're going to wear this. But the one shirt you couldn't get anywhere near was the warm-up shirt, and it was this diametrically designed of these crystals, really, and you think, fuck. Not, is it just so, and obviously they've gone and won it, which is the perfect springboard for you know, the correct attention, especially for young girls playing football in PE and whatnot. But if they hadn't, and everyone that was selling out, it was like, well, this is the only way, you know, sort of make it more available. It's interesting how many of those sort of sold out, but almost for the wrong reasons. It was like, you know, make as many as possible. Yeah, yeah. And especially to see, and it's a bit simplistic, but it is one of the most powerful tools, is have a load of men on the tube platform wearing them, you know, make them in bigger sizes. Yeah. And they you know, they sort of do become collectible. Because you mentioned it, I've got a table, a slight quiz, on manufacturers winning the most Premier League titles. So who was wearing what? So we've got five or six different shirts, but what's the most famous manufacturer? So what manufacturer's won the most Premier League titles?
Most Premier League.
Yeah.
Most Premier League.
It's very close between first and second.
Do you think Umbro's can be up there? Umbro can be up there. Because Chelsea won it in Umbro as well.
Yeah.
Initially.
I've got notes for this one.
Yeah, okay.
A lot in Umbro. So
93, 94, Blackburn was Blackburn 95.
And side question, what teams won it in most different brands? There's one team that's won it in three different manufacturers. But
that would be, that can't be United, because they've only won it Nike and Umbro, haven't they? They've never won it in Adidas. Must be Chelsea, because Umbro, Nike, Adidas, must be.
I'm going to say, Man City. Yeah, Umbro.
No, they never won it in Umbro. Actually, they have,
Umbro, Nike, Puma.
Nike and Puma.
But there's one between the two, and you're pretty close. So we go for Nike or Umbro, top and second. Who's?
Umbro, Nike.
Well, Nike, because they are Arsenal.
Yeah, only just. Yeah, Nike got 12. So Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, and Man United have all won it in Nike. Adidas, only three. So all three were Chelsea. And Chelsea have also picked up two. It's quite interesting looking at, again, that this obsession, not obsession, but correct focus on the 90s. It's quite an interesting one, thinking sort of what happens next to 2000s and Chelsea. Obviously, the investment comes in, but the kits are crap. So, you know, you've got a squad of 23 that's, you know, like Mourinho, he's trying to do it with Roma, but it's like two players in every position. You know, Paul Ferreira comes in for all that money, never mind Glenn Johnson as well, all of that. But they win their first two in quite an impish sort of navy blue with quite horrible, not horrible, but like, but it is that detail. That was before, but the gold Umbro detail. But yeah, but Umbro 11. So Nike 12. Puma twice with two different teams. So City already mentioned, and Leicester, So Leicester lift it. Yeah. And then there's one team with one. There might be two. I think
Newcastle
you're right.
Should just sign Asics up now.
Just now.
Yeah. 10 years.
After this. And then...
go back to it, imagine that.
Yeah, Liverpool lift it. Yeah, that would be an instant win. But Liverpool lift it in New Balance.
Of course.
Moving on to Nike.
Yes,
But... that also, that always reminds
not
me.
Which you can't talk about.
What the fuck was Warrior before that? But maybe that's for another time. Have you got Warrior in your worst kids?
The worst thing ever. Anyone, I genuinely think they should be banned from making
Warrior or New Balance.
Warrior.
Well, that was because it was New Balance's football arm.
Yeah.
So the idea was, and I think it had worked a little bit with collegiate soccer, and they'd sort of gone for it. And then we ended up with these, and they were so gross at a time where...
Peak Brendan.
This is the other thing. This is so good. It's amazing amongst, and obviously Arsenal was... What's called it? Would You Rather? What's it called? All or Nothing. Yeah. Very different show.
Would You Rather?
Sounds like some 80s, like, weird.
And here we are. Call it 90s.
Yeah. Selection.
Shag, marry, avoid.
That was it, yeah. Arsenal edition.
We should do that.
Yeah. Ramsdale, Tavares, Jesus. Anyway, it doesn't matter. With those shows, so obviously with our fingers burnt, but apparently Klopp's always just said, like, I will just walk out. Don't bother about money, whatever else it goes. If you even suggest bringing cameras in, and you only have to sort of watch it. But when the cameras were there, it was fairly peak. Warrior, Rodgers. I'll leave it, the accent to you, but I've got three names in an envelope. But I was, so.
Shag, marry, avoid that.
That was it.
We'll talk about that.
Episode 3.
Okay. Oh, I think that might be a good point. We should take a quick break.